Breakfast Fridays.
Our news tonight, there's been a new animal aimed in the direction of falling off the face of the earth. Yes, young black teenagers are recorded to be the oldest and the newest creatures added to the endangered species list. As of now, the government has not made steps to preserve the blacks. When asked why, a top law official adds, because they make good game.
Living large, telling me to get out the game. I'm a nigga, gotta live by the trigger. How the hopes do you figure that I can say peace and the gunshots won't cease? Every cop killer goes ignored. They're just sending a nigga to the morgue. A boy scored, they can give up a fuck about us. They'd rather catch us with guns and white powder. If I was old, they'd probably be friend of me. Since I'm young, they consider me the enemy. They'll kill 10 of me to get the job correct. To serve, protect, and press again to connect. Cause I'm the one with a trunk of fun. If it's the police, then the tape deck. You should listen to me, cause there's more to see. Call my neighborhood and ghetto, cause the house is minorities. Now the color don't know, you can rub it, I hide. Those details from the dark side. All of us are in danger, yeah! Damn!
Back again on WPFW 89.3 FM. I'm Jared Ball. Happy to be back with you. It's a good Black August. Black Fist Fridays edition again of I Mix What I Like at WPFW 89.3 FM. I'm running solo this week. Dr. Hate, Dr. Burroughs out there handling the people's business. Want to shout out to all of them and their loved ones. And the increasing and expanding collective. I'm going to come back and tribute that a little bit later on in the program. We do have a lot to get into today. A lot is happening. Red Eagles on the board, as always, making sure things sound as they're supposed to. DJ RBI is out there tweeting about us already. Good looking out, my man. At I Mix What I Like for all your relevant social media. imixwhatilike.org for more on the show and more. Or email us directly at imixwhatilike@gmail.com. So I'm going to ask you right off the top to bear with me here. We have a lot to get to. We're going to pay tribute with a special Freedom Archives audio documentary tribute to the recently assassinated Hugo Yogi Pinnell. It's tragically fitting that this comrade of George Jackson would have been killed this past week in the month of August, just after being re-released into general population. There's a lot more to come on that, and we're going to look to help whatever coverage of that comes out. We want to help deal with that, because another political prisoner, 70 plus years old, we have lost without him being freed, without him having his just due attention. So we're going to help pay tribute to that a little bit in just a few minutes here with a brand new audio documentary that features Hugo himself and some of his comrades talking about the life and work of Hugo Yogi Pinel. So rest in Uhuru to him, and continued strength and struggle for all of his still remaining and living comrades, including those of us who claim we support the lives and work of political prisoners. Of course, today in 1971 was the day the Dragon came. The Dragon was released. George Jackson and his comrades led an attempted prison break. George was assassinated. And in just a few minutes, part one of our George Jackson releasing the Dragon video mixtape is going to be released on the Real News Network and at imixwhatilike.org. So by the end of the next couple of hours, you're going to spend with me here at I Mix What I Like, and then with you and community comment. After that, you can then, as time permits, when you take your WPFW breaks, you can check out imixwhatilike.org and see part one. I am extremely, extremely excited and proud of the work that we have done. Bashi Rose has edited this piece, and it is amazing. The people who have contributed, I mean, it's just, I'm very excited. Is what little we could do to pay homage and tribute to George Jackson on this day, August 21st. Of course, the Black August tradition, which we paid tribute to, began with the work and tribute to George Jackson and the struggles in Attica and elsewhere. So stay tuned for all of that. Let me just go over a couple of things here. We started off the track, this show, with Endangered Species. The track by Ice Cube featuring Chuck D. Came out on America's Most Wanted, which was the first solo album of Ice Cube after his break with NWA. The movie Straight Outta Compton came out last week. I did have a chance to see it, and perhaps later on we'll have some time to talk more about it. It became the fifth largest opening, August opening movie in movie history. And I think because it is so well done, and it is well done, it's a good movie. I am not suggesting we support it financially. I'm not suggesting that that's what I did. I am suggesting that it is worthy of being seen. It is well done. It is well casted. It is well acted. It is well written. It is well performed. I think there's so much good about the film, and that is why it is the huge problem that it is, because of all that it does not do. I had a chance to do an interview for the Real News Network with Sikivu Hutchinson about her critique of the film and it being not addressing NWA's role in bringing about what she calls rape culture in hip hop. Watching the movie did remind me that of all the music I liked and loved back in the day when they all first came out, I mean, it is rife with anti-progressive, anti-humane, anti-woman commentary. And as much as I liked it then and still like some of it now, that is still true a critique and reality. The other reason why I wanted to play that track by Ice Cube and Chuck D at the top of the show is because it is also emblematic of another thing that was left out of the film, which is in when they talked about Ice Cube's break with NWA and even showed that he had linked up with the Nation of Islam, again, caricatured in film, another critique we could have, how the Nation of Islam is caricatured in popular media. But they left out the fact that Chuck D and Public Enemy had linked up with Ice Cube and helped increase his radicalism in his politics, which started to show up in some of his music for a time before, as the film Straight Outta Compton accurately depicts, he and Dre became spokespeople for capitalism and commercialism and the state that they had gained some fame critiquing. So this is, you know, why Paul Mooney and others have made the point that all black people are for sale, just some haven't been purchased yet, why we see people's careers and trajectories change. And it's not just about getting older, by the way. I would want to add that very quickly. A lot of people maintain their politics and their strident rejection of capitalism and state sponsored trinkets and toys and accolades in favor of real struggle and real politics. But they left that out of the film. You know, Public Enemy is not even mentioned. Chuck D is not even mentioned. And that was a huge part for those of us who remember that time, where there was even excitement for some of us that Ice Cube had taken his strength and his power and his lyrical ability and started to move towards where Public Enemy was going. And even in the, even as you just heard in that song, the second verse is anti where I am. It's anti Pan African. It's anti, you know, it's anti appropriate use of violence. But, you know, he was still a man in progress. And there was a brief moment where I and others, I think, thought that Ice Cube was going to link up and that even Public Enemy was going to increase in its power and strength. But, the commercial world collapsed on them as well, and forced them to the margins, and then forced, of course, the rebirth. The return of Flavor Flav and popular iterations of Public Enemy to be based on Flav of Love and all that nonsense. So anyway, I just wanted to put that out there. I encourage people to check out that interview with Sikivu Hutchinson on mixwhatilike.org for more on that as well. And there's so much more that we would want to get into about that film, and perhaps later we will. I want to also just update people and encourage people to, you can find this at imixwhatilike.org as well, and elsewhere just on YouTube, the press statement released from Daruba Bin Wahad and Kalanji Changa in response to their vicious, brutal beating by the new Black Panther Party in Atlanta a couple of weeks ago. And without commenting further on what I think happened, because I was not there, I still do not know all the details. This is a press conference that I think needs to be seen. And I just will rest again on the statement that there is no justification for the kind of viciousness and brutality and violence against Daruba Bin Wahad and his comrades. Daruba is 71 years old. He is a legend of the Black Panther Party and Black Liberation Army. He is one of our best political analysts still going today. And there's just not, and that kind of vicious violence is not cannot be accepted or tolerated. So whatever comes next, I hope that there is a way to peaceably deal with this. I don't know about reconciliation, but peaceably deal with this and have the political differences drawn out, because the political differences that I think Daruba was intending to raise and still intends to raise are worthy of conversation and discussion on some level, absent this kind of violence and hostility between members of the Black community and ostensibly the Black radical community in particular. So I mean, so anyway, that statement is out. They refute what the new Black Panther Party rather has been saying about that incident. They offer their arguments, and you can see Daruba, and I mean, it's disturbing, honestly, to see him in such a brutalized state, unable to talk, communicating through a wired shut jaw that was broken in three places by handwritten script, and having Kalanji speak for him as best he could. That's it's disturbing, but I think important to watch. And then they deal with some questions that people have raised about what happened, and they address certain things, like, for instance, just quickly saying that they did not intend to become violent. They did not have any weaponry. Daruba did not brandish any weaponry, and that certainly did not swing or attack first or anything of that nature. But they address other questions, so we'll let folks deal with that. Hopefully you'll check that out on your own. Again, one other thing I wanted to add. You're listening, by the way, to I Mix What I Like here at WPFW 89.3 FM. Just trying to catch up a couple of things before we move into the rest of our program here. Dr. Haight is handling the people's business. Dr. Burroughs is doing the same up in Newark. And Red Eagle's on the boards. Just a couple other points I want to get to here very quickly. We also had... Okay, we also had a chance at the Real News Network this past week to talk with leaders of the Beautiful Struggle, members of the leaders of a Beautiful Struggle there in Baltimore, about the Black Lives Matter encounter between Hillary Clinton and with Hillary Clinton last week. And I want to try to fold this into some quick comments about what some are talking about in terms of the popular journalist for Daily Coast, Sean King, and some calling him the male Rachel Dolezal, and And the an exchange that I just saw earlier today, in fact, between Dream Hampton and Erica Totten. On Twitter, which is I think emblematic of many problems that we're having. I'm gonna step aside real quick and take a quick break here at I Mix What I Like, WPFW 89.3 FM. I'll be back in just a quick second with more on this, but so stay tuned. This is I Mix What I Like here at WPFW. We'll be back in a minute, 89.3 FM. Peace, everybody.
I mix what I like. Been a long time, but everything that's going on from Ferguson to Baltimore to Sandra Bland in Texas to Cincinnati to Columbus, I would be wrong if I ain't really offer nothing to the struggle. I do this for the people. Welcome to Freedom Summer. Let's go.
Black people, I love you. That's why I pledge allegiance to the struggle. Cause I'm really out here with your homie. I can never judge you. I'm not the type who be poverty pimping the poison, the children, the glamorize the poverty stricken conditions. They try to start like I'm the godliest, but it's for godless within them. I look and see God in the mirror. Far from a feeling of the dick, got that guard you within them. I look to Malcolm, Fred, and Huey to impart me with wisdom. Cause them black is the advocate for that black kid whose family was victim to the system back with crack kid. Steady beefing with the plug and the war on drug, the private prison owners, and the laws are all controlling. So take this as my onus to war against the poses. I'm standing with the people, white supremacy is my opponent. So if you looking for some bars up in this verse, I blast the racist system, man, I gotta put the people first.
All right, back again. I Mix What I Like, WPFW 89.3 FM. That was a new track from Marcel P. Black, People First. My man continues to impress. We appreciate that. So as I was saying, let me come back to this real quick. We are in a moment going to get to this Hugo Pinnell piece and run it in its entirety. It's that important, and he was that important, and it's important to again to pay tribute to this Black August tradition and that of particularly political prisoners. So you're going to hear about Hugo's life and his work in that piece. Maybe play it in two parts and then maybe talk about it a little later on. But I did want to get back to a couple things to finish up here. There's been this, Sean King has been one of the more popular journalists coming out of the Daily Coast website and covering Black Lives Matter, police violence, et cetera, and so forth. And as I was saying before the break, some people who are on the right who have been trying to take him down have very fair skinned cat, and people were trying to make this whole thing about, you know, he's the male Rachel Dolezal, that his parents are both white, and he's been claiming a biracial mixed race background and took a black scholarship for black men from Oprah Winfrey to go to Morehouse or something of that nature. And then I want to try to quickly fold this into this exchange, this very hostile public exchange between Dream Hampton, the longtime journalist, author, Malcolm X grassroots member, filmmaker, and Erica Totten, the locally based Black Lives Matter activist. And past Hater of the Year award winner here at I Mix What I Like. They had a very public exchange. And I just want to quickly fold off. And also, by the way, this conversation we had with Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle at the Real News Network last week, mixwhatilike.org. You can see that there as well, about the exchange between Hillary Clinton and a couple of Black Lives Matter activists. And I want to try to fold all this together to make the point that, or the several points that the baseline for all of this is, I think that we are in an for me at least, is that we are in a moment, in an era of non-collective organized work. The tradition, the extension of political organized collective movement building activism has not been sufficiently extended to the current generation. I think this is my generation's fault. I think that this is the insufficiency in our work, but is of course in part, in large part, and probably primary part, in response to the state's repression of those political prisoners of the past and the work that they did then and the work that they've tried to do and influence going forward. So this is a state-sponsored COINTELPRO-like destruction of movement and organized collective radical organizational building. Part of the remnants of that is that my generation was not sufficient or strong enough or capable enough or able to overcome those obstacles to prepare this generation for what I think it needs to be doing, which is why I think Black Lives Matter is not sufficiently organized. It's not sufficiently strengthened to the point where it can defend against these kinds of attacks and these kinds of divisions, or where it can prepare people to do collective work, where there's a protocol, where there is an accountability, where there is preparation for the limelight, so to speak, or for taking us in what I think is a more progressive or radical direction. This is not to condemn them in their work. This is to suggest, just humbly from my own personal experience, that we need to step back and better organize ourselves and prepare ourselves for the work that we're doing, and walk away from what is, I understand, the popular tendency to do individual sort of contracted out activism, punditry, journalism, and spokespersonry, if I can use or coin a different term, that the intent, the individual nature of tweeting and Facebooking and online activism is, I think, seeping in, and increasingly so, to a Black Lives Matter organized, potentially organized movement, and causing all these kinds of divisions. So when I watch the Black Lives Matter activists confront Hillary Clinton, the first thing I'm asking is, where are the demands? She schooled them. I totally disagree, by the way, with what Juan Gonzalez said on Democracy Now! In interviewing them the other day, that they should be congratulated, when in fact I think that they should be lovingly pulled aside and encouraged to strengthen their organization and the goals and the protocol. Because why are they talking to Hillary Clinton? What is the goal in talking to Hillary Clinton? Where are the demands in the specific platforms or agenda items to be brought forward to a Hillary Clinton? Where is who are they accountable to when they are speaking on behalf of Black Lives Matter or a Black community or an agenda? Should it even be an agenda item to speak to Hillary Clinton or to engage mainstream political candidates in at all? Should it be, as I've advocated and wanted to advocate and worked with others to advocate, the goal shouldn't the goal be to move to the left of all of that, to create new electoral political strategies, or to eschew them entirely, get to where Du Bois was at the end of his life and walk away from electoral politics as it's currently constructed entirely? And I think that this is in part of why we've been influenced, and why for so long, and to some foolishly spent time being critical of the left and its media work, because I think that's what is I think in this instance negatively influencing current generations. I think we're influenced by MSNBC. too much. We're influenced by Democracy Now to a certain extent too much in its increasing liberalism. And what that causes is it because we're cut off from the radical tradition so often and radical activists so often and radical history so often, we encourage in our younger activists this kind of individualized, unaccountable, unclear, unorganized activity and individualized activity. And this was the nature of the online beef, so to speak, between Erica Totten and Dream Hampton, as I read it. That it was Dream Hampton being critical of Erica and DeRay McKesson and others as individual contracted out journalists and spokespersons who are disconnected from actual organizational work, who are disconnected from radical traditions of organizational work. Now, people may be critical, myself included, of maybe the way Dream approached this or the way maybe Erica posted publicly what Dream was saying privately. But I think that fundamentally this is the issue. That rather than people being born out of radical grassroots organizations, they are born out of nonprofit, very liberal, very individualized processes and influenced by an insufficiently radical left-leaning alternative media to behave in these patterns, to behave in this way. And it leaves us open to this kind of very public and hostile interaction. And I think, and confusion around who we are and who's involved. Is Sean King black? Is he not? Et cetera and so forth. I've been very clear, just very quickly to share autobiographically. When I was coming up in becoming more active, I asked elders what they thought about what my place should be as a so-called mixed or biracial man with a Jewish mother from a suburban, basically a suburban, you know, Section 8 suburban household upbringing. To what extent do I need to publicly make clear who I am and what my position is? And they all said very clearly, if you're going to work in black nationalist, black radical struggle circles or in black political spaces, you need to make clear with those who are your comrades, who you are, where you come from, and put it on the table for them to know so that there are no surprises, no confusions, no potential. And most importantly, to reduce the potential for outsiders to abuse those differences or that discrepancy or those whatever. Particulars. So I've always been very clear with those with whom I work that this is who I am and these are my politics and this is why I'm here. Not to get into a debate or to justify or to apologize for who I am or my background or anything like that, but just to make clear. And I think it is important to make clear so that people understand who you are. So if Sean was at all unclear, that would be, I think, more of an issue with the lack of organization if that he's coming out of and that it being sort of an individual journalist rather than a part of an actual organization or a movement. Same thing with the discrepancies between Erica and Dream, I would argue. That because we're not sufficiently organized, because we're not sufficiently aware of all who we all are, and not preparing ourselves for coming struggles, we leave ourselves open to this kind of unfortunate and hostile exchange that leads us nowhere. Anyway. I'm going to get off the soapbox. We're going to turn it over to the Freedom Archives here in just a second. So you all can get caught up with, Hugo Pinnell, the recently assassinated. And you'll hear why, that I am saying that and others have said that, in just a moment. And then we'll come back and hopefully we'll talk a little bit more about George Jackson. We had invited Askia Muhammad to come on and talk about his time covering George and his experience there. Something I missed on WPFW the other day when he was talking about that. So we'll get into some of that here as well. So don't go anywhere. Much more coming up again right here at WPFW 89.3 FM. This is I Mix What I Like. Again, I'm Jared Ball at I Mix What I Like for all your relevant social media. imixwhatilike.org. imixwhatilike@gmail.com. Perhaps I wasn't clear enough or sufficient enough in my analysis or explanation. I'm happy to follow up with anybody who wants to. If not, let's move on and give other voices a chance to be heard. So don't go anywhere. Again, much more coming up. WPFW 89.3. I Mix What I Like. Peace if you're willing to fight for it.
Blackfist Fridays. It's Blackfist Fridays.
I mix what I like. Ruin this for your brain.
Take it in.
We ain't never gonna give this style up.
This King Karnov.
This the essence. This the essence. Turn me up a little bit, Fox.
Here's what we gonna do.
Fight.
Protest.
Rebel.
Stand up.
Cadres.
Soldiers.
Warriors.
Hands up.
Fight.
Protest.
Rebel.
Stand up.
not going on after Chris. Hate, I get mad with this injustice, I'm attacking this. Looking back to Chris, the streets are back in this. Real talk, real walk in New York, we're not acting this. This is not a rehearsal either. This is for the real, I'm trying to inspire our next leaders. I used to hold heaters, yeah. You can see that on my first and second album covers right there. But I blew up and grew up quickly. And realized to my surprise, yep, God picked me. Or more like kicked me, and I woke up. The rest of these so-called rappers was poked up. I read books and got my hopes up. Right around the same time the West Coast was looked up. I was no duck, no sucker, no punk. 6'4 with the pump, taking no jump. Straight leg jeans on, mostly Lees on. Nylon tape, got my BVDs on. Bally's, Nike, BK,
Adidas. I mix what I like, what I like,
sneakers. Like. When I was growing up, the big.
Just a little bit of KRS-One, Bumpy Knuckles, Stand Up is the name of the track. Just very quickly, we are having a little mini pledge drive here. We do need some support here, WPFW 89.3 FM. So please do get on the phone, 202-588-9739, 202-588-9739, and show some support for the station, this show. Drop a couple dollars on it. Let them know you have five on it at least for our mix, what I like. $35 is your basic membership. But, you know, we'll take whatever you got. We understand your cash strap. We understand the situation. We understand we've been asking a lot for money here, but we do need it, and it's been put to good use, and you don't get media like this anywhere else. You know that's true. So let's go, 202-588-9739, and let's get into this Hugo Pinnell, freedomarchives.org for more on this. Long live Hugo, Yogi, and the struggle he represents. Peace if you're willing to fight for it. Here we go, everybody.
I mix what I like, what I like.
Few of us may know the name Hugo Pinnell. That's because the last time he was in the newspapers was probably in 1971 or 1976, when he was tried as a member of the famous San Quentin Six. Six young black prisoners facing assault charges stemming from battles with guards at the notoriously repressive California prison. Yet that wasn't the beginning, nor the end of things. Hugo Pinnell, known by his friends as Yogi, came to the U.S. as a 12-year-old from a small town on the eastern coast of Nicaragua. If he knew the hell he would face in America, would he have left the country of his birth? We'll never know. He came. And he has spent the last 42 years in prison, 34 of them in solitary. He hasn't had a write-up in 24 years. After a lifetime in some of the most repressive joints in America. Why so long? Why so many years? The answer, not surprisingly, is politics. Hugo was a student and comrade of the legendary Black Panther Field Marshal, the late George Jackson, and worked to organize other black prisoners against the racist violence and prison conditions of the 60s and 70s. Consider this. When Hugo was sent to prison, Lyndon Baines Johnson was president. The bombing in the Vietnam War was intensifying, and Martin Luther King Jr. was still alive. Of his introduction to the prison system, Yogi would later write, "In 1964, I was 19 years old. I turned myself into the authorities to clarify the charges against me. The deputies beat me several times, and the public defender and the judge influenced my mother into believing that I would be sentenced to death unless I pled guilty. I pled guilty to the charge of rape, with the understanding that I would be eligible for parole after 6 months. When I arrived at the California Department of Corrections, I was informed that I had been sentenced to 3 years to life. This is Mumia
Abu-Jamal." This is Emory Douglas, revolutionary artist, activist, former member of the Black Panther Party, 1967-1981. This is in memory of Hugo Yogi Pinnell. He was a childhood friend, and we grew up together in San Francisco and hung out in the Fillmore District of San Francisco, where I lived and where there was a very large African-American community during that time. On several occasions, I remember going to his house, and we also went to parties, played basketball at the playground. We were used to shoot pool and also Dice trying to make a little money on the side during our teenage years. Most everybody back in the day in the streets knew Yogi not as Yogi, but as Hugo. I recall when he started identifying more with his Nicaraguan roots, he began to hang out with his family much more. Thereafter, we would run across paths off and on, but he always had a good spirit, joking, talking with those he knew, and even then, as a youngster, he was very, very strong-willed. I recall when Yogi got arrested, the word out on the street was he was with family that committed the rape, not him, but he wouldn't testify to that in court. It was many years after Yogi was incarcerated, I saw him for the first time since our days as youth in the courtroom as one of the San Quentin Six defendants. He was chained and shackled like a modern-day slave, but by no means was he broken in spirit. He, too, like Comrade George Jackson, had transformed himself into a freedom fighter by any means necessary.
This is the voice of Hugo Pinnell.
I've been in the shoes since they opened in 86, from the Hadley to the Coburn to here. I began in 1990. And this is the Hadley to Coburn. They had yards that you can go through and exercise with other people and work out and get fresh air. And so you push them, they push you. So he was good to, you know, you could stand shake like that. But when I got here in 1990, I realized that they don't have no yards, that it's just like an alleyway and you stand to sit all the time and you find yourself sitting around a lot. So watching more TV than you want to, trying to find some food that you can enjoy, that you can make it bearable, you see. So when I came in 1990, I'm thinking that all I had to do was 4 more years and they had to release me because I'm under the indeterminate sentence, you know, way back
in the even if he was listening, what I was saying is this, what I was responding to was already made public.
It was for assault, 9 years to life.
They don't listen.
So when I went to the first hearing in 85, I'm expecting them to tell me that they won't set a hearing for me, like they did all the indeterminate sentence guys, that I'm not really a lifer, that I'm just, you know, not under the new determinate sentence, that I'm not really a lifer because assault doesn't constitute murder or anything like that. So, but none of that, they just told me, they started denying me 1 year, 3 years, they hit me with a hard one, 5 years. And when that hurt me, I didn't want nobody to know how hurt I was, my mama left me, and I didn't want them to suffer, so, but that kind of slowed me down.
I'm a comrade of Hugo Pinnell, who's no longer with us. Hugo was killed at New Folsom. We had heard some months ago that he would be killed if transferred to the mainland there. I am of the opinion that his killing could have been prevented by the guards if they had wanted to, since they knew that he was a target. There's no way to get around that. His life was a living hell, but he endured. 70 years old, more than 50 years locked down. He was no monster. He was a revolutionary. They have killed him, but they have not killed his spirit. Hugo, you live on. Hugo Pinnell, live on in memories that others share. Our brother is dead, murdered through conspiracy of the CDC, no matter who actually carried out the hit. I said that the CDC is responsible because they had received letters warning them that Hugo would be killed if he was released to the mainland at New Folsom Prison. Why not send him to some prison where there was no known threats against his life? Hugo is not the monster that is being portrayed in social media, news media. In 1965 at Vacaville State Prison is where I first met Hugo. We both were in guidance center. When prisoners first come into the prison system, each is first sent to a reception center to be evaluated before being transferred to the joint where they are scheduled to spend most of their time. Vacaville is one of those centers. Besides being introduced to each other, we would just see each other around the yard. It was only later on that we would get to know each other on a deeper level. From the guidance center, we both went to different prisons. From time to time, I would hear about him standing up against racism and white supremacy. I seem to remember him being at San Quentin some of that time before he came back there in 1970-71. During the San Quentin 6 trial, I really got to know Hugo. He was, as we all were, under a lot of stress. His stress was heavier than mine's because he had the additional load of being beaten on regular occasions, tortured, physically tortured, having clubs stuck up his rectum by guards, prison guards. My friend and comrade of more than 45 years has been killed. He has passed on, never to return to planet Earth. So long, my friend. Your journey has been long and arduous. Truly a warrior's trial. No longer do you have to suffer the decades of not touching or being touched by another human being other than your adversary. No longer do you have to endure the hatred of people who don't even know you and never dare to love you. You have proven that not only is black beautiful, but that brown is also just as beautiful. You have represented George and Che. Well, I salute you. I salute you. I salute you. Long live the gorilla.
I gotta be free. I keep telling myself, I'm gonna be like Martin Luther King did. I remember when the night before he got shot, made a speech to say, I've been to the mountaintop. I saw the promised land. I didn't know what he was talking about then, but I realized that when you keep struggling, keep working, and you're being honest and truthful with yourself and with the people and your goals, all of a sudden you feel like, you know what, I'm afraid, I don't want to die young, I want to live to take care of my children, my wife, my people, but you know what, but there's something inside of me that makes you feel really good. I'm not afraid of any man anymore. You see, it's a human being like Malcolm who can change it. I remember when Malcolm first started. By the time he got killed and assassinated, he was talking about human life. He realized then that you can't be in a world where only white people are free, only black people. Everybody has to. Freedom is for everybody, and you have to push for everybody.
My name is David Johnson, and I was a member of the San Quentin Six. And the six of us were charged with August 21st incident in the Adjustment Center at San Quentin Prison. It was in the San Quentin Adjustment Center that I first met Hugo Pinnell when he was sent there from Soledad Prison. When I first met him, I fell in love with that brother. His spirit, the gleam in his eye, I was inspired by him. And George Jackson can be considered the spokesman for the prison movement. But I would say, because of Hugo's spirit and energy level, he definitely was the spirit of our movement. When we were locked up together, we spent many hours of talking. It was through him I learned about the struggle in Nicaragua, about the corrupt Somoza regime, and the history of repression that had been taking place there. When I was released from prison, I helped people who were putting forth and making the public aware of the struggle that was taking place in Nicaragua. Yogi told me about the struggle in Nicaragua before it was even a common cry in the leftist community. When I got out, as I said, I worked to try to get the Nicaraguan government to see if they could work out an exchange for Hugo. He fought tirelessly to better condition, but not just black prisoners, but all prisoners. He suffered at the hands of prison guards immense brutality. brutality as they sought to break his spirit, and in breaking his spirit, break our movement. But he resisted, and I was impressed and inspired by his resilience to resist those efforts to break him, to break his spirit. And as George said, for years he was in the crosshairs. We witnessed murderous conditions on the yard of Soledad Prison in 1970, and again in 2015, we witnessed murderous conditions on the yard of Folsom Prison. It is sad that a brother who fought so tirelessly to change conditions and better things for prisoners, that he would suffer at the hands of other prisoners in conjunction with the prison administration. We've lost a courageous brother, but his spirit will live on. And may others be inspired by his efforts to free up humanity from oppression, injustice, and inhuman conditions. Long live the spirit of Hugo Pinnell.
But remember that one time Nicaragua won the independence too for a while. So I was getting support from those people in the Sandinista, and they were sending me pictures of young girls, 16, 17, with young boys in a struggle, and they were, you know, so they kept my spirit alive. Mm-hmm. And they said, hold on, brother, we're going to try to bring the natives some back, you know. So, you know, in the 80s, the ambassador was trying to... You remember in 1985-86 when the Sandinistas shut down a helicopter from the United States, and they captured some Americans. They told them, we'll give it back to you in good faith if you give us our sons. But then when they, in Christmas of 86, when they brought the Americans back, the United States reneged and said, you know what, on second thought, we're not going to give you Hugo Pinnell, but we'll give you some money. And that's what they did. And at that time, you know, I was thinking I was getting ready, you know, because young girls and things, they would write to me and say, we're ready for you to come and contribute to a revolutionary society, to work with the youngsters, and, you know, you got the young spirit, and so we want to share with you. And I was ready. I was so excited. My wife was with me, and she said, Shirley said, let's go, you know, let's go and start anew. But fortunate for me is that it's been the few people in my life that I've met, you know, along with my mom and my family, that has kept me together, that has kept me pushing, you see? Because my mom said, okay, now that you're alone, your wife passed away, and I hope you really understand what is this struggle that you get yourself into, because that's what you're going to have to rely on. He said, and I, you know, she made it clear for me. She said, I'm always going to be there for you. And if you really mean that what you say about love, what love does for you, okay, then I'm going to give it all to you. And then if you want me to be proud of you, because she used to be angry with me for many years, show me. Show me about this new man that you say you're building. Show me. Don't show me for 20 years, for 30 years. Show me for as long as we're alive. Show me. Even if they don't let you out, you show me. You see? So I said, okay, Mom, let me go to work.
Hasta siempre, Hugo. Solidarity forever. And now we are saddened by your sudden departure from us. Adios. Adios. Solidarity left you when it should have counted for something more, and for what your long imprisoned life stood for. Solidarity forever. Now all your struggles to be free have failed, and only death, and an inglorious and violent death, has claimed you at the hands of the cruel prison system. La lucha continúa. Hasta siempre, Hugo. Vato, órale.
I started something, I got on the freedom train, and I'm going all the way with it. You see what I mean? New me will tell you, Yogi being there when he's working out, he's singing songs when he's working out. Like, I don't know if you ever hear about this, Impressions, Temptations, Keep On Pushing, People Get Ready for, I changed words, for the train to freedom. And then I talk, I say, you don't need a color, you don't need a race, you don't need a mixture, you don't need permission, you don't have to sign your name on anything. Like the song say, you don't need no ticket, you just get on board. But if you get on board, you got to have the willingness to be free. You have to try to understand what that means to you, because other people might come around and tell you, this is my definition of freedom. That's not good enough. You see, I don't want to shortchange myself. I'm holding on this big rail in the train, and I'm holding on. You see, so if a bullet don't kill me, if an accident don't kill me, I got to do it for the brothers and the sisters and the people who believe in freedom, who died before me. I got to do it for them now, you see, because they're not here anymore. And they believe in this. They say one day it's going to happen. It's not going to happen in a lifetime. It's not going to happen in the next lifetime, but it's going to happen. So stay in it. I said, okay. And then I realized that now I'm not just doing it for them. I'm doing it for me too. I want to be free, you see. But it's not necessarily going to the street. Being free inside of me.
Just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the dealers humming. Don't need no ticket. You just thank the Lord.
I mix what I like.
Yeah, this is it. I had this defines me.
I mix what I like.
Turn my mic up. Let's do it. Vivid, I'm Marcus Garvey, football Muhammad, Mega Havasin, Bob Marley, I'm God body.
I mix what I like, what I like.
WPFW 89.3 FM. Back with you, Jared Ball. Skid Muhammad's in the building, man. Good morning, sir.
Greetings.
I want to thank you for coming in and joining us and being gracious enough to stick around into the next hour for community comment. That was a tribute to Hugo Pinnell from the Freedom Archives, freedomarchives.org, for that. Claude Marks and company, we greatly appreciate that work. Quickly, let me thank a couple of people. We are in a little pledge drive here, 202-588-9739. We have a couple of people to thank. We have Anonymous in D.C. Thank you so much for your pledge of support. My mother out there in Columbia, Maryland, Arnett Ball, thank you very much. You will not be anonymous on this program. Thank you so much. And Anonymous in Mitchellville, Maryland, thank you as well for your contribution to the show and to the station. For those who want to join us again, 202-588-9739, and let them know you have five on I Mix What I Like and WPFW. Brother Muhammad, I wanted to take advantage of the spoiled nature of my position here at WPFW to ask you to come in and say a little bit more about Black August, George Jackson, your coverage of him and that incident, because I missed it the other day, and I heard you were on talking about it. So I was like, well, so the privilege of volunteering here is that you get to work with people like this, and so I appreciate you. So if you could, in just a few minutes, well, really, dad, we gotta transition.
Why don't we roll over?
All right, so let's roll over. Okay, let's roll over. Red Eagle's still here. We're gonna roll over. Community comment comes up. Your chance to share your story of the week and dialogue with us a little bit. Askia Muhammad's gonna stick around. We appreciate that. I thank all involved for this portion of I Mix What I Like, WPFW 89.3 FM. Thanks for letting me get on the soapbox earlier. Shout out to all the loved ones who support this program and more. And we got just a slight, you know what? We're gonna have to Anyway, we got a lot to get into. So we're going to roll over here. WPFW 89.3 FM. Get into community comment. Your chance to share your story of the week, or as Dr. Haight would say when he was here, when he is here to share your week story. but anyway, please do get on the phones and join us. 588-0893. But also don't forget to get on that pledge line as well. 588-9739. So thanks to everybody. Peace if you're willing to fight for it. We'll catch you in the whirlwind. Red Eagle, go ahead, man. Take us out, man. We'll catch him. On the flip side here with Askia Muhammad. Thanks, everybody. Peace if you want to fight for it.
It's Black Fist Fridays.
I mix what I like.